Okay, now it's time to get on with our program. Okay, our first interview is going to be Bob B., 51 years sober. He's going to be interviewed by Chris G., who is a District 8 GSR. Take it away, gentlemen.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Bob. My name is Chris. The date is 12/17/22. This is the MSCA 09 archives. And I'm interviewing Humble Bob B. Okay. This tape is produced for the Mid-Southern California Area Archives, and as such will not be reproduced for other uses. This tape will remain in the custody of Mid-Southern California Area Archives. Do I have your permission to tape this interview?
Yes.
Please state your name and sobriety date.
Bob B., 1671.
All right. Welcome, Bob. All right. I'm going to jump right into this. If you could tell us a little about the early days in Riverside AA.
Sure. I'd like to first thank Bob, wherever he went, for asking me to share with you guys today, and what an honor it is to actually go down in history and be in the archives, something my sponsor is probably turning over in his grave about, and a few other people. But Bob H. has been a big help to me this week, trying to come up with some dates that it was real hard to find when the first meeting in AA in Riverside was. And what I was trying to do was see when that meeting was held, and how long I had been sober, and my sponsor had been sober, and other people. And I've actually been sober 36 years after AA started as a whole, and 26 years after AA here in Riverside started. And you have three people today that will be sharing with you that are in the class of 1971, which is a year that Bill Wilson died. And Bill Wilson actually died 18 days after I got sober. So I feel blessed to have been breathing the same air. But my early days of AA on that journey started in Riverside County Hospital. And in my early days in AA in Riverside, I got sober in AA in 1971, and I've stayed in AA even though I moved to Redlands some 30 years ago. My home group is still the Tuesday night podium participation meeting in Riverside. But I was in Riverside County Hospital, and there was a thing on my feeder that they give us, and it said, Happy New Year, and I didn't even know they had a New Year. And I ran out of that hospital. They had tubes down me, and I pulled them out. And I ran out of that hospital, and I drank for a day and a half more. And I knew those people in AA had an answer. They were happy. They had a lot of joy in their life, and I hadn't had any of that. I'd been in the streets between Venice Beach and People's Park in Berkeley for quite a while. And you know, I have low bottom snobbery too, I have to admit that, because the street people today are not like us back then. And so anyway, I got into the Nelson House, and I was in the Nelson House, and I went to a meeting, and I came home late, and they threw me out for being late. And I am an example, I guess, of you can stay sober if you're desperate enough, without any roof over your head or any food or any job or anything else. Because I moved from the Nelson House behind the only club that we had at that time, which was the Alano Club, and we called that the Potato Chip Factory. And that's where most of the meetings were held at that point. And I slept behind the Potato Chip Factory, and the women used to have a lunch meeting. and they'd bring out sandwiches from their lunch meeting, and if I hadn't been awake yet, they would lay the sandwiches next to my head so I had food to eat. And it was interesting, because at that point in time I was going through Sermon on the Mount while I was laying out behind that club. But there was a guy, we all had nicknames back then, and the reason I'm Humble Bob is because they had Banning Bob, Bitchin' Bob, some other Bobs, Freeway Bob, you know, so we had to identify each other. So there was a guy named Snaggletooth George who ran the AA club, and he'd let me in the AA club 3 nights a week to sleep on the pool table. And that's in January. I got sober January 6th, so it was really cold out there. About as cold as this room is. So, anyway, that started my journey in AA. And then I know that the early days in Riverside AA, there wasn't very many meetings. There was like 5 meetings in AA. And we could make, me and Billy Gertis, he was a problem child also, we could make all the meetings in AA before they finished the readings in Riverside and see who's in there, right? Which one did we want to go to? And they were interesting. The first AA meeting in Riverside only had 3 people. And here, 26 years later, we only still had 5 meetings in Riverside, right? And so I was wondering why they didn't promote it what better. But I guess they didn't have the courts feeding us all the people that we have today. But it definitely was a journey. Some of the people in early AA was Clarence the Painter. And he told me when I was in the club, Bob, you can sit around here in this club and you can play checkers like those fools over there, or dominoes or whatever they're doing, or you can talk AA. And he says, where are you going to be in 10 years? And I was so grateful to him. And he says, watch. And he'd start talking AA, talking about the big book. And it's pretty soon we had a whole group surrounding us, wanting to hear, wanting to listen. So that was my early days in AA. My sponsor was somebody who wasn't somebody I picked. I would be sitting in there with the guys and in the AA club, and the closest one to us from there, because we were all walkers just about, was in what they called the Scout House, but in a church up there. And we could walk up there. And I forgot what I was going to say. Where was I?
Scout church.
Getting old, boy. It's happening to me. But I know my sponsor. He would come and start talking to us guys that were sitting there, all us newcomers. And he'd leave, and I'd say, what is he talking to us for? Why is he bothering us, right? Well, he became my sponsor, and he got me back into the Nelson House, and because he was on the board there. And then him and I worked together for 5 years. He set up mobile homes. And he had the only big book meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous in the area. And you talk about God working his magical plan back then, because he gave me the big book and the sequence that I needed for this hard head to get it and be able to stay sober. And he set my foundation. And for that, I'll always be grateful to Pete Lawton, Pete L., who's gone to the big meeting in the sky now. And it's interesting how it matriculates down, because his sponsor was Keith, and Keith had the only big book meeting, and then Pete inherited that, and Pete and Hap's sponsor was Goldine L., and a lot of people remember Goldine, so, you know, we're all related by incest, probably, but but all related by sponsorship families anyway. And, you know, today I see Big Lou back there, and he brought some of his sponsorship family, and I sponsored him for a while. But his sponsor, Smitty, I wanted to get into the archives, his name as well, because he set the foundation for Big Lou. And then there's Ernie, who I've been his sponsor for 42 years. And it's so nice to have those types of relationships, and you can absolutely have them as well. But my sponsor, you know, he says, while you're on step zero, you know, and he says, you either accept this program of Alcoholics Anonymous or die an alcoholic death. And him working together with us for, working together with me for 5 years, we really argued AA program out of the big book for 5 years. I mean, it was pounded into me. And I knew when I got under his skin, because I would be the type to do that, right, needle him. When I really got under his skin, he said, you're just too damn young to be an alcoholic. And then I said, oh, I got him. And but boy, working with him was a perfect example of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and how two people together can learn from each other. And, you know, he said to me one time, what about this Jesus thing? I said, I don't know. You're a grandfather. You got grandkids. You go find out and come back and tell me. And he really did. He became an example of Jesus, who he got into his life and became his higher power and became my example of the Lord that my hand was, I mean, the loving God that my hand was led to as well. But that was sort of the early days, Chris. Probably went on too long, huh?
Thanks, Bob. So yeah, you covered a couple of the of my items here.
Oh.
So we're right on track. So let me ask you about the meetings in Riverside. Was it different? Did you? What kind of changes have happened?
You know, the big thing that I remember happening to Riverside AA, and I don't hear very many people talking about it, is, and it really shows how important the newcomers are, is we had the answering service in the AAA club at the time. And I was on call from midnight on. And, of course, everybody says, oh, we'll help you, we'll help you. There was nobody to help you. You know, you 2 o'clock in the morning, you're getting the bars closed and you're getting the calls from the drunks. And I remember an old wooden hotel downtown Riverside that I'd get calls to go into with these drunks after 2 o'clock in the morning. But there was absolutely no one. But there came along the Arlington Club, and they stole the answering service from the original Riverside Club at the potato chip factory. When they stole the answering service, they told everybody that called them, come over here, you don't need to know anything about AA, we'll tell you everything there is you need to know. Well, we didn't have any newcomers out here. There was no newcomers in the real AA meetings in that Alano Club and the churches that we had, the 5 meetings that we had, and we almost died because of not having newcomers. Everybody was getting at each other. You talk about fighting. And you really realize how important the newcomers are. And so I was complaining to my sponsor. And he says, you know what? It's just as much your fault as anybody else's fault that they don't know anything about real AA. He says, you get your butt over there and you stay there. And so that's how I got involved in the Arlington Club. That's eventually where I met Ernie there and conned him into going to a meeting at 2 o'clock in the morning. We had an alcathon or something. I said, I'll be there. I wasn't planning on being there, but I knew Ernie would be there. But, you know, that was something that was really that stuck out in my mind about the early days in AA and how impactful it was when it came to newcomers. And how I'm supposed to say hi to Jay and the guys at his house and the women at New Creation, because they're supposed to be zooming in there. And they're the ones, you know, who our mission is to still carry that message to those newcomers. And as I walk through sobriety, that mission has changed numerous times.
The newcomers are the future.
Yes.
They need to be, I believe they should be taught right. Let me see. So, kind of went a little bit into some service work. What can you tell us about your service work in early Riverside? I know there's an extensive part of your recovery or life in recovery
that yeah.
is attached to that.
And it all started with AA and service work, some of the things that you're talking about. And, you know, there was no young people in AA. Billy Gertis and I were the youngest people, and him and I started the young people's meeting, the first young people's meeting in Riverside, and it was called the under 40 meeting because there's nobody under that we could talk to. And you know, that thing flourished, then I was the one of the founders of the Tuesday night podium participation meeting. And I had, by my sponsor, got pushed into going into Riverside County Hospital, where I ran out of, and I had a panel in there. And that led me to getting involved with the Institutional Committee of AA, and for some years I had the responsibility of buying all the literature for the hospitals and jails and institutions. I think they call it the Life's Club, Lifers Club, or something like that.
They call it something new. This lady right here is in charge of that now.
Oh, and I'd buy all the literature. I'd go to bookstores and buy big books, and we saved a lot of money doing that. And we get it mixed up with the Lifers Club. There's a Lifers Club up in Tehachapi, the prison up there. And those people aren't getting out, and they, because we took meetings up there to them, they made me an honorary member of the Lifers Club. But that setting up meetings in hospitals and institutions, I didn't do that yet. I was a Lifers Club person. And then they elected me to be the director of the Inland Empire Institutional Committee, and they had an election. I wasn't that new in AA, I mean that old in AA, and they did this to me. And I had been running against Tommy Chacon, and I thought he was going to be a shoo-in. He'd had it for years. And I got it. And, you know, I really started to appreciate service work and GSRs and everything. There was a group up in Lancaster that was having a problem, so there's a person from L.A., one from Orange County, me and somebody else in a car. And they were talking about decisions they wanted to be heard in this meeting, this service meeting. And here four guys are, they're making decisions for all of Southern California. And they're saying, if you tell anybody that we did this, So I learned a lot about GSR in the early days, how things were really made out in the kitchen, right? How many people make decisions. But that led me on to some other things, the service work. I ended up running a DUI program for the county of Riverside, and then because I sponsored another connection to AA, sponsored somebody that was working for Senator Presley, he opened the doors for me to come to work in the county of Riverside. And Big Lou reminds me of all what he does now for the county of Riverside. It makes me think of those early days. I had two titles, alcohol control consultant for the county of Riverside and director of their employee assistance program, which they never had before. So I had to figure that out myself, right? And my job was to help all the county employees that were internal with any personal problems they had, financial, legal, marital, alcohol, drug, any of it, from Corona to Blythe, just me, no phones, no nothing. They gave me a beeper and said, adios, go out there and fix the world. And then the consultant part was I set up meetings at the Sheriff's Academy, teaching them about alcohol and drugs, and the schools that would call in, I'd have to go out and meet with those. So really quick, I got that my feet wet into all being connected through the service work in H&I led me to setting up these meetings. And I was in the county for some years, and I developed a unique program. And we called it a public-private partnership, where the county actually thought, we thought if we could, we would drop the alcoholism a notch if we offered our program to private companies. So I developed a private company one, and because it was so unique, they sent me to Sacramento, and Governor Duke Majian put me, that tells you how old I am, he put me on the Alcohol Advisory Board. And of course, you know, if I'm involved in something, I got to take it over. So I became chairman of the Alcohol Advisory Board. And while I was there, they sent me to first New Mexico. And all of us people went down there and met four governors in New Mexico. And what we're trying to do is figure out how to stop the drugs coming across the four corner states and come up with some policy for that. And we actually, in that meeting, set policy. Well, I met a young governor that went on to be the president of the United States. And when he got to Washington, you know, he looks around and he says, there's nobody on these committees and programs that have ever been there. So through the RNC and other people, they did an outreach, and I was contacted to become a member of an advisory board to advise Congress on alcohol in the workplace. And it was alcohol in the workplace and other issues. I think there was a longer title than that. So here I was, a guy who used to puke and lay his face in it and didn't think he was going to wake up, to being asked to go advise Congress on these types of things. And if, you know, they're watching out there in those recovery homes, if you're new or fairly new, so I used to stare at my feet in those, in sitting on my bed in the recovery home, saying, it's not going to get any better than this, right? And really, my life is beyond my wildest drunken dreams. Am I getting the hook?
No.
Okay. Go ahead. I'll let you ask another question. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm not sure how to time this one. So I'm going to go ahead and do this first. Try to save a little time for your, to tell me about your, how important your home group has been. But how did you do it?
How did I do what? Stay sober?
How did you do it? Yes.
Well, it was almost intensive care. They thought I had intensive care for at least the first 15 years because I was in meetings morning, noon, and night. Anytime I got a chance to be in an AA meeting, there I was. And then carrying the message to the newcomers in jails and hospitals. I actually went to work in one of the prisons that I set up their AA meetings for, CRC out here in Norco. I became a correctional officer out there, and I knew all the, well, not the men, but I went to work for a year in the men's unit and then 4 years in the women's unit, and I knew the women because I started their AA meetings for them. So here we were growing up in prison together. And how I did it was listening to my sponsor first, drill the big book into me, give it to me in the sequence that I needed to stay sober, giving that back to other newcomers, and then getting on this journey that turned into an amazing adventure.
That's great, man. Thank you. And then tell me a little bit about your home group that you were a huge part of, one of the original members.
Yes.
You're really respected there. Tell me about it.
Thank you. Myself and Lexi R. from Victorville and some other people got together and started the Tuesday night meeting, podium participation meeting. And
how long ago was that?
Lexi and I are now she is my co-chairman of the Inland Empire Conference Committee for Old Timers, the Old Timers Group. And we had a meeting and we were trying to figure out what date was that. And it had to be in the early 80s that we started that meeting. And it's nice that we can still be friends. Lexi and I sort of communicated together really well, and so when we broke up, she had that meeting, and I had this part of Riverside, right? So I didn't go back to that meeting for a while, but it's nice that we are now. I think Lexi's got 46 years on the program, and it's nice that we can still come together and work together on these AA things and remember back those old days of when we were involved in setting up that committee and that meeting. And it really has been a grounding force in my life. I live in Redlands, and I come here every Tuesday for that. And, you know, I've watched people come in there and newcomers and helping them. And Bob and I were talking about this the other day. You know, it's something to help the newcomer come in, but it's also something when you are the part of the person's last AA meeting that they've ever had because they're dying. And to be part of that is something. And I know that Lou touched bases on that with me the other day with his sponsor Smitty, and you know it's really special. And if you got a home group, you can have those relationships for years and years and years, and you absolutely know when there's something wrong with a person because you see them every week, right? And you can pull them over and pull their chain and say, "What's going on with you? What kind of help do you need? How can I help you through this?" And watching somebody take their, not their cake, but their last talk in our Tuesday night meeting. And I knew it was his last time, and he knew it. But somebody forgot to tell the secretary. So when his time's up, right, she was trying to get him off the stage, and I'm saying, "Please let him go on. This is his last meeting." But those types of things can really tug at your heartstrings.
Bob, it's been an honor. I love being able to talk with you.
Love you too.
Tuesday night podium, you can see Bob there every week.
Absolutely. In the same chair.
The same chair. Thanks, Bob.
Yes.
Is that it? Can you get up now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, hold on. Read that?
No, leave that.
Okay, but I have a disclaimer to read at the end, don't I?
No.
I don't need to read. This concludes the interview.
Oh.
On behalf of the Area Archives Committee, we want to thank you for allowing us to record this interview, which will be kept securely at the Archives Repository in Riverside. We invite you and your fellow recovering alcoholics to visit the Archives Repository someday. Your story will now be a part of our history. Bob. Thanks, Bob.
Oh, that was awesome, Bob. Thank you. Thank you, Chris.